When we become Christians, you'll often hear people talk about inviting Jesus into your life. Now, there's something that's really important about that. The idea that actually the living God kind of comes into the reality of your life and where you are. And into the circumstances that you are facing, and into the struggles that you have, and into the sin that you want to get rid of. He comes and he dwells in you. And so there is a way in which it's very appropriate for us to speak about becoming Christians in terms of our God coming into our life, Jesus, inviting Jesus into our life. But that needs to be balanced with the other idea of actually what's happening when we become Christians is that we are being invited into the life of God. We're being invited into the life of Jesus. And you need to hold those two things in balance, because if all we ever think about is, okay, becoming a Christian is about me inviting Jesus into my life, then my whole kind of vision for Christianity, my whole sphere for what I expect to see God to do, where I expect to see God to work, is limited by my life and my experiences and my struggles and my sin. And it all becomes very sort of centered in on me and what God is doing in me and in my life. And when we remember that actually as well, when we become Christians, we're invited into the life of God, well, that gives us a very different perspective on what it means to be a Christian. Right? Because now we're not limiting God to the sphere of my life. Suddenly, we're being lifted, as it were, up out of our life, and we're becoming a part of what God is doing through, not just in us, not even just in our church, not even just in our town or in our nation, but what God is doing throughout the nations of the world. When we become Christians, we are caught up into this sort of epic vision for all of creation, God's vision for the nations. And so when you read the Bible, you see that Christians are people who have this global perspective. Take a couple of the Psalms, for example. So Psalm 99, the words of that will be coming up on the screen. In Psalm 99... should have had a Bible here. What kind of preacher gets up to preach without a Bible? There we go, right. See, Psalm 99, right? He is exalted over all the nations. All right? Let all the nations praise your great and awesome name. All right? Or flick over a couple of pages to Psalm 105. Where are we? Back one, Psalm 105. Yeah, give me a head. Psalm 99, okay. All right, make him known, make known among the nations what he has done. All right, that's our call. Our call as a church is not just to be focused in on our individual lives, not just to be focused in on our church, not just to be focused on our town. Like, in the worship songs of the Bible is this call to make known among the nations what he's done. And one more, a couple of Psalms later, Psalm 107. Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story. Those he gathered from the lands, from east and west and north and south. See, embedded in the worship of the church is this vision of what God is doing, not just in our church, not just in our context or in our culture, but what God is doing throughout the nations of the world. And that is something that we are caught up into when we become Christians. And when you read the Bible, the church is really kind of sensitive to this. The church is really aware of this. And as you read through the Bible, what you find over and over again is this sense of sharing in, being committed to, being involved in and caught up in what God is doing throughout the nations of the world. It's just seen as an integral part of being a Christian. Just an integral part of being a church. So we've just had 2 Corinthians chapter 8 read to us. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 verse 19. Paul, the guy who wrote this letter, he's from the Middle East, and he's writing to a church at Corinth in Greece, and he's writing to that church about another church in the Middle East that has gone through a time of persecution. You know, some of the people have lost property, they've lost their jobs, they've lost income, they've lost their family because they've become Christians. And now, on top of everything else, this church is now in a region where there is a famine. And so Paul is writing to a church in a completely different part of the world. He's writing to a church on a different continent. He's writing to a church in Greece saying, okay, but guys, these are your brothers and sisters in Christ. And I know they're in a different culture. And I know they're from a different background. And I know they live in a different nation. But we are part of something that crosses national boundaries. We are part of something that transcends ethnicity and culture. We are part of something that takes in the whole world. And so just because they're in a different part of the world, actually, you still have a responsibility. These are still your family. And he writes to them to ask them to provide people and to provide money, resources to support the church, not in their town, not in their nation, but in a different part of the world. And you see this just over and over again in Acts chapter 8. Alright, again, when the apostles in Jerusalem heard that Samaria had accepted the word of the Lord, they sent Peter and John to Samaria. So you've got a church again in Jerusalem. The next nation up, Samaria. There's a church starting there. So the church in Jerusalem sends some of their best leaders to go, kind of cross-cultural, to go and to help this church that's just starting out, to lead and to teach and to preach and to disciple them so that these people who are just becoming Christians kind of get a really good sense of what it means to be a Christian and are encouraged to live that life out with integrity. You get it again. Paul is in prison in Rome, and he writes a letter to a church at Philippi. So the next slide, Philippians 2. And in it he says, I think it's necessary to send back to you this guy Epaphroditus, who is your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. So again, you've got this a Middle Eastern church leader in prison in Italy, writing to a church in Greece, saying thank you, because you sent some people and some money and some resources to support me while I'm in prison, and now I'm going to send them back to you. And you see, we just read that, and we just carry on. We've got to realize that what's going on here is this sort of like international operation of support and provision, where Christians from all over the world are working together, supporting one another, providing for one another, sustaining one another, and giving in order to make sure that the church elsewhere in the world grows and is built up. There's one more, Romans chapter 15. All right, Paul's like, again, I plan to visit you when I go to Spain. I hope to see you while passing through, that you will assist me on my journey. So again, you've got this Middle Eastern missionary, and he's part of a team of people that's kind of cross-cultural and multi-ethnic team. And he's writing to this church at Rome in Italy, saying, we're going to go to Spain to start teaching there about Jesus and to get the church going in Spain. And what we want is the church in Italy to be a part of that. So can you provide some finance for that? Can you provide some people for that? So that together, working a team of people who've come together from all over the world can go to a new country and start a church there. And you see, it's just over and over again. This is just woven into the fabric of what it means to be part of the church. And it's always been God's heart. Right back at the beginning, when Jesus turned up to Abraham, back in the book of Genesis, the first book in the Bible, Genesis chapter 12, one of the things that Jesus very first said was, all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. All right, so here with Abraham is the beginning of the church as we kind of recognize it today. And the first thing, one of the first things that Jesus says is this is going to be a global multinational operation. And so when Jesus then sends, you know, he's about to go to be with his Father in heaven, and at the end of Matthew's Gospel, what does he say to the church? Go into all the world, make disciples of all nations. That's the way it's going to be. And when John started the services, when John sees the church, as it were, at the end of the world, the thing that really stands out to John when he's writing the book of Revelation is that this is a people, this crowd of people that no one can number before the throne of God, is a people that is drawn from every tribe, every tongue, every people, and every nation. That's the thing he sees about the church. It's this multi-ethnic thing that we are all connected to. This is what is shaping us. It's part of what it means to be a Christian. It's not an optional extra, a sideshow for people who have a particular kind of bent to cross-cultural work. This is just what it means to be part of the church. So we have to have this balance, because we are called to be part of the church here now in Ipswich. But we're also part of the church that stretches through the nations of the world. And that balance is kind of built into the rhythm of our worship here. So, you know, a lot of the time we are wrestling with the question of how do we live as Christians here in Ipswich? How do we do church here in Ipswich? But actually, every term, we have a Sunday or a weekend that we've put aside that we call Global Church Sunday. And that's when we lift our eyes above the horizons of Ipswich, glorious though they are, and look to see what God is doing elsewhere in the world. It's why we support mission partners, people who are working elsewhere in the world, churches and organizations from elsewhere in the world. A percentage of our budget is given year on year on year to support the life of the church, to support the cause of the gospel, not just in Ipswich, but all over the world. It's why we pray for those mission partners. It's why we're in contact with them. It's why we invite them regularly to come and to speak in our churches and to remind us of what's going on and to give us an insight into what God is doing through His church throughout the nations of the world. It's why in a couple of weeks we'll be starting our Christmas shoebox appeal. You know, over the course of about 3 or 4 weeks, we will process about 12,000 shoeboxes that will be filled with Christmas gifts that will be shipped out and will be used by churches throughout the world as those churches seek to serve and to give to their local communities. It's why we have a link with the church in Tanzania. We had a bishop from Tanzania here a couple of months ago. And right now, Dorothy Double is in Tanzania working with a college that is training pastors and missionaries and church leaders. Why is she doing that? Because we are part of what God is doing, not just in Ipswich, but what God is doing throughout the nations of the world. It's why we link and we are a partner church with Open Doors. Because Open Doors is an organization that connects us with the life of the church throughout the nations of the world. And we've got a short video now that introduces you to the work of Open Doors. See, we watch something like that and we think, okay, so our relationship with the rest of the church in the world is one where we are supporting the church in other countries. But I want to suggest to you that actually there are ways in which we desperately need to be supported by the church elsewhere in the world. Because there are things we have forgotten. We have forgotten how to fast and pray. We have forgotten how to do evangelism. We have forgotten in some ways what it even means to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, because we have forgotten how to suffer and how to sacrifice for our faith. I actually traveled with Open Doors to a country in North Africa a couple of years ago to meet some church leaders, pastors. These are guys who have the same job description that I have, but actually their whole experience of leading churches is an absolute world away from mine. We've just done a baptism here this morning. When these guys baptize people, they are aware that they are handing down a death sentence. One of the guys I was talking to said his church, his congregation, is made up of the survivors. People who have survived attacks on their life. In 1998, he started a church because two students had been studying in France, had become Christians, and had gone home to North Africa. And having become Christians, they didn't then know what to do. What does that mean? How do I live as a Christian? So this guy found out about these two and began to meet with them. So in 1998, this church had three people in it. Today, 2018, 20 years later, there are 1,200 people meeting in secret in that church. They have four baptism services a year, and at every one of those baptism services, they would anticipate seeing between 80 and 100 people becoming Christians. They were stunned, and I mean they were speechless, when I explained that in Britain, it wouldn't be uncommon for churches to go for 2 or 3 years without seeing anybody becoming a Christian. We need their support. I was asking him, how do you inspire your church to pray? You know, it's something that's big on my heart. It's something we were preaching on a few weeks ago, that as a church, we need to learn to come together, to pray together. That prayer is the engine room of the church. And he didn't understand the question. He didn't understand why I would have to explain to people, why I would have to inspire or encourage my congregation to come together to pray. He'd be like, isn't it obvious? He talked of a desperate sense of urgency. He talked of needing God in everything that we do. Needing God just to survive today. Needing God just to get through today's service. See, we need their support. This country is a country where evangelism is illegal. It's a criminal activity. When you speak to someone about Jesus, the likelihood is you will be in prison in the same day, and that you will be fined the equivalent of about £900. So what do they do? What do? Well, as a church, they make sure that they have financial reserves available so that when people are arrested for doing evangelism, they're able to pay the fine. They will make plans with their family because they know that they will be spending some time in prison. As a church, they fast and pray for 5 days, and then they go and tell people about Jesus. And that is how their church has grown from 3 to 1,200 in a country where it is illegal to be a Christian. Our relationship with the church throughout the nations of the world. See, it's easy to be patronizing, and it's easy to be arrogant and to assume we're the ones with the nice buildings. We're the ones with the resources. We're the ones with the skill and the theological education, and we can help everybody else. I want to suggest to you this morning that actually one of the reasons we need to cultivate our relationship with the global church is because of what they can give us and how they can support us. as we learn again what it actually means to follow Jesus.